Beloved listeners, this is Kenneth Lesser here with Advanced Living Radio. Happy Saturday. We are so excited. Every Saturday, a prayer is put out that we bring value to your lives, showing you some information, revealing sources, helping. It could be products, it could be services. It's just something that's going to make your life or the lives of those you care about so much better. And today's topic, oh my gosh, this one is a very relevant topic for many people. It's the topic of recovery from narcissistic relationships. Now, we're going to put out the word narcissist, beware. You've met your match. If you've had problems getting over past relationships, you can put all that behind you. Because you can now tune in today, and as you listen in, you'll hear Kalia LaRoche show you how you can cut those energetic ties to the past, recover your soul, and take your life back once and for all. Kalia's book, Spiritual Recovery from Narcissistic Abuse, will give you insight into how you can gain your freedom from the past. And are you experiencing depression, suicidal thoughts, inability to cope, feelings of low self-worth, any obsessive thoughts? Well, any of that is just part of that whole pattern. Are you feeling as though you can't move forward? Well, Kalia LaRoche will guide you to reclaiming your personal power and recovering your true life energy, because she's been there and done it and come out the other side just as happy as could be. And Kalia has made a commitment to inspire others to their fullest potential in mental, physical, emotional, financial, and spiritual health and wellness. And she utilizes her gifts of music and therapy, writing, psychic intuitive counseling, and coaching to achieve her goals. What a wonderful combination. She is an accomplished musician with 2 CDs out and a 3rd underway, and her voice is hauntingly beautiful, just such an ethereal voice that rivals the best in female artists. Oh, you've got to hear her. Go to her website, www.kalia.com, K-A-L-E-A-H.com. Separate from all this beautiful stuff, just the music is going to lift your soul. And she's passionate about health and wellness, and she founded Health Inspirations in the year 2001, where she offers insight, information, inspiration, and products to help others reach their health goals. Coaching and counseling is something that come naturally for Kalia, and she is a certified clinical hypnotherapist with years of experience counseling and coaching others to help them achieve their fullest potential. So get ready, beloved listeners, for some fun and adventure as we welcome Kalia LaRoche. Kalia!
Thank you. Wow, what an introduction. Is that me?
Yes, you can go look in the mirror and you can just say, congratulations, girl, I've done that.
That's wonderful, and welcome to you who are listening. I'm sure we have a really great show today, and talking about some really in-depth stuff.
Oh, it's so important. And for those that aren't familiar with it, would you help us get started? What is narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder?
Well, you know what? The topic of narcissism is starting to pop up everywhere. I am hearing more and more people talk about it. It's becoming wider known. You know, you hear that word a lot, but a lot of people don't really understand what it means. They think, okay, self-love, self-absorbed. But the true meaning that I am talking about with narcissistic personality disorder is we're talking about a person that has the basic inability to experience compassion and empathy. So, you know, what really happens is when you can't experience compassion and empathy, you can't really experience love because you can't put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah.
So
that's key.
That's key, is we have to be able to have concern for the other person in order to love them.
Ah, and that piece is missing for people that are dealing with this narcissistic personality disorder.
That's right. And, you know, because, you know, to take it one step further, because of the inability to experience compassion and empathy, they compensate. These personalities compensate by learning to be highly manipulative. They learn how to control a situation. They learn how to study a person to find out what makes them tick and use that information to get what they want, whether it is to engage in a personal relationship with another person or, you know, whether it, you know, there's a lot of different situations that one can get in with a narcissist. It's not just personal relationships. There could be work. There could be a corporate kinds of structures. There's lots of different structures.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's more widespread than I've considered.
It's even in our government. Can you believe that?
Let me think. We don't want to mention any names.
No, we don't want to mention
president.
Any names.
So we won't do that, so obviously some people can appear quite charming.
Absolutely.
And that's a part of the way that they're able to gain access to people and then to manipulate them.
Absolutely.
So, now, a question comes up about, you know, you've been involved with that, I believe I have, and a number of others, I'm sure, of the listeners out there. Now, why do you feel that those who have been involved with someone with this disorder are so deeply affected?
Well, there's a lot of layers. It's really is a complex disorder, and there's a lot of layers, but I would have to compare it to a soul rape, that when we get involved in a relationship like that, we give parts of ourselves away unconsciously. We start being unconsciously absorbed into the reality of the narcissist. We start, you know, giving ourselves away to that manipulation without realizing what we're doing. And little by little, our self-esteem and our feelings of self-worth are tapped at and pecked at. And until we have relatively little self-worth left, and we feel very devastated by the experience.
Wow! So it, is this something that typically happens over a period of days, weeks, months, or does it vary from relationship to relationship?
It really varies. I've been working with victims of narcissism for quite a while now, just because I made the choice to go this route in helping people. And there are people that have been involved in 3-month relationships, and there's been people that have been involved in 30-year relationships.
Oh my gosh!
And you know, the devastation can be equal.
Huh, yeah.
You know, I like to think of, are you familiar with the Stockholm Syndrome, where, you know, there was a six-day hostage situation in a bank robbery, and there were a group of people who, in the end, were really supportive and had negatively bonded with their captors. And this was 6 days.
Ah.
6 days, and the victims of this situation ended up actually testifying for the bank robbers. When they went to court, they were supporting them. They had gone through a negative bonding with them. So, I mean, that shows us what is possible in 6 days.
Huh. Boy, talk about being completely swept up into someone else's reality. Well, that's a compelling story. I'm curious, of course, you have your own personal experiences in narcissistic relationships that are the inspiration for your e-book there. And I'm just kind of wondering, how did you come to recognize that you were dealing with a narcissist?
That's a good question. I never recognized it. The whole of my first relationship with a narcissist, and, you know, I can look back before that relationship and see narcissistic tendencies in other relationships. However, the one I'm referring to is by far the most devastating. And I ended up leaving that relationship of my own accord. It was my choice to leave the relationship. However, I never was really able to get over it. I was really finding myself being obsessive about it, couldn't get it out of my mind. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't able to focus on anything else. It was consuming my entire life. And I finally, on the advice of a friend, decided to go get help. So she recommended a psychotherapist to me. And I went to this psychotherapist and filled out the normal battery of tests, fully expecting that there was something wrong with me, that I was going to be diagnosed with some horrible mental illness, some compulsive obsessive disorder, something. There had to be an explanation to why I was feeling this way.
Yeah.
And, you know, after the battery of tests and the intake where she asked me, you know, a whole bunch of questions and asked me why I was there, and I explained to her, you know, it has to do with this relationship and I just can't get over it and la, 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 la. And she just looked at me. It was a very wise woman. It was an older woman. She was a doctor in psychiatry and obviously knew what she was talking about. But she just looked me square in the eye and she says, he's a narcissist. And my question was, you know, what's that?
Yeah.
And she said, well, go look it up on the Internet. She tells me the little Greek mythology story of the character of narcissist who, you know, fell in love with his own reflection in the pond and ended up, you know, drowning. And that's where the narcissist lily grew. And that's a pretty common story of where the origin of narcissism comes from. But at that point, she was telling me that this isn't about you. And you have to understand, I come from a psychology background. I'm not a psychologist, but I've studied psychology most of my life. And my understanding is everything's about me. You know, when it comes to something being wrong in my life, it is about me.
I mean, claiming personal responsibility for your life.
Taking personal responsibility. But when we're in these kind of situations, we take more responsibility than we need to. And that's where I was, as I was carrying this psychic energy. I was carrying this energy for this other individual, this narcissistic individual. And for my 3-year relationship with him, I was the vessel in which he unconsciously dumped all of his repressed issues.
And now, was there a lot of him turning to you and verbally dumping concerns or whatever, or was it done in other ways?
No, this particular person, and this is not the case with all narcissistic personalities, but this particular person was very quiet, very highly intelligent, and had no issues. He never had issues. I admired, I admired the man for never having any issues. It's like, how can somebody be that together?
Oh.
So outwardly, nothing ever fazed him. Nothing ever shook him. But it seemed like the more in control he was, the more out of control I became.
Wow.
And, John Gray has a really interesting, he has this book, What You Can Feel You Can Heal. And, John Gray is the author of Mars and Venus.
Yeah.
And I was reading that book when I was in this relationship, and he has this example of an emotional tube that connects two people in a relationship. And the tube is shaped kind of like a U. And in the, where one party in the relationship stuffs his emotions, it goes down that tube and comes up the other side.
Yeah, so repressed emotions of one person in a relationship often end up as expressed emotions in the partner.
Right. And that's exactly what was happening for me, which explains why I was feeling so unstable emotionally in that relationship. As I was expressing all this hidden, really dark, repressed stuff within him was coming up in me, and I didn't understand what was happening.
Wow, boy, and so that's how you ended up thinking, geez, I'm ill, I'm not well, I need help.
Absolutely, and I was physically ill as well, to let you know. During that relationship, I got very sick physically.
Ooh.
So it can affect us on all levels.
Huh, yeah, absolutely. I guess I kind of understand that if we don't address issues in the energetic or in the mental or the emotional realms, then we end up having something break down in the body to get our attention that it's an unresolved issue.
Absolutely.
Huh. So you were able, with the help of the psychologist, to recognize that you were in a narcissistic relationship, were able to break free, I'm assuming.
I did, and it wasn't without going back and testing it. Which is a typical thing that we do. When I told her, I went back and saw him again, she says, I'm not surprised. So I think I had to go back and test it just to make sure she was right about that.
And now, what was helpful for you when you were going back? Because so often in some of these abusive relationships, people go back again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So this time you went back with some more information. I guess something was shifting inside of you. So I'm curious what enabled you to see, I guess, was the same person, but you were starting to see it through different eyes, or help me to understand that, because that's an important piece for people listening so that they may be able to make a breakthrough for themselves, to go back and re-examine some relationships in their life with a more wisdom and understanding.
Right. Well, in my particular case, I didn't go back to living with him. I just saw him a couple times and stayed at his house a couple times. And the thing that happened with me is I couldn't sleep with him. When I say sleep, I mean literally I could not sleep. I was wide awake, and my body would not let me sleep.
Wow.
So it was almost like I was waking up, and there was an aspect of me that wanted to be healed that would not allow me to go back to sleep in that situation, which was, symbolic of my inability to sleep on a physical level with him. So I just was unable, in that particular situation, I was unable to go back to it. I could not be the same person anymore. I couldn't go back to sleep, and I couldn't buy into the illusion again.
Ah,
and that was my salvation.
Yes, Yeah, so that helped you to become free from that relationship. And if I'm understanding correctly, your next relationship was kind of interesting too.
It was, yeah. I was ripe for the picking because although I could not go back to that relationship, I was still dealing with, major trauma. I was dealing with low self-esteem, feeling like my wing was broken. And here comes along this big, strong man that wants to, fix my broken wings. So then we got involved in a relationship that was entirely different than the one I had come from. There were very little similarities. So it wasn't like I was going back into the same situation. It was a new one.
Mm.
And we had set up this agreement of, I'm here to support you to fly again. When you have somebody coming along that's here to support you to fly again, there's an assumption, that you're broken to begin with.
Yeah.
So in order for that relationship to survive, I had to take on the role of being broken.
Ah.
What that meant is I couldn't ever fly because that would, shift the dynamics of that relationship.
Oh, okay. So it was just limited to in scope. And then if I'm hearing this correctly, because we're talking about another form of narcissism, I guess.
We are. It was another narcissistic relationship. Over the years, it had become highly controlling and invalidating, competitive. I found a real competitive with both relationships. It was highly competitive. It seemed there was a jealousy. I'm a musician. I'm on stage. I'm out there in the public eye. And in both cases, it seems like there was a jealousy about me being out there that way. And sometimes it was just as easy for me not to be, to kind of go back and, stay home.
Mm.
Because I didn't really feel that support to be out there, performing. It was a really unconscious process that during my second relationship, I started to really wake. This, a lot of my study was coming during this time. And another important thing that I need to mention is that the second relationship, when I started seeing the signs and thinking, oh, okay, here's another narcissistic situation, I would discount those signs and once again take complete personal responsibility and tell myself that I am projecting my former narcissistic situation onto this one. And I came to believe that. So rather than really seeing it as it was, I developed a belief that I was the one projecting. And so I spent a great time in self-study. I spent a great time taking care of myself in that relationship. And he was okay with that because he was a loner. So he'd just go off and do his own thing. And I spent a lot of time studying. And then one day it was just a big aha. Yes, I see what's happening here. And I was able to free myself once again.
Mm. Well, huh. Now, finally, it's like you dipped into the well a couple of times, and yet it was two different, different cesspools. That's probably not the nice thing to say.
Yeah.
But both of them, their own form of suppression and repression, and especially to set up a dynamic where, for things to continue, you had to continue to be ill, continue needing to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And there just became a point, I think it's our spirit's natural desire to fly, to be all that we can be. And we know on an unconscious level, there's little inner promptings that tell us that something is preventing us from flying. And for me, it was like I knew That was my highest path, and I could feel that something was chaining me back, something was holding me back. And I did take some responsibility. I mean, yes, part of it was me. I allowed myself to stay in that situation, and it was not supporting me. But in the end, you know, I really saw that that relationship was holding me back, and I needed to get away from it in order to truly step in to my full self-expression, one that would not be tampered with, where I could be free to express who I am.
Wow. Wow. That's so important. Now, I'm wondering, do you feel there are any certain personality types that tend to get involved in these narcissistic relationships?
You know, that's a really good question, and personality types, I would say no. I would say everyone is susceptible to a narcissistic relationship. However, the healthier we become, the less likely it will be that we find ourselves in a narcissistic situation for any length of time. So usually narcissistic behavior starts to surface about 3 or 4 months into the relationship. You start to see the signs because there's kind of a put on the first 3 months or so. That's when everybody's on their best behavior, including the narcissist, and he doesn't show that side of himself. He shows his best side, as we all tend to do in a relationship.
Sure.
But after those 3 months or so, things start getting a little bit more real, and a healthy person's going to draw a boundary. They're going to say, hey, wait a minute, this is not okay with me. And a narcissist is going to say, screw you, what do you mean it's not okay with you? It's what I want. I want to do that, you know. And in that case, you know, a healthy person will say, wait a minute, this is an unhealthy situation, I'm going to leave. That's more likely going to happen, and I know that because I myself have been in those situations since I've had this information, and I've done that exact same. It was the same thing, and it was one time a man I was dating before I met my husband, and a couple times it was friendship situations or corporate situations that I found myself in where I've had to draw a boundary, and, you know, boundaries are simply not accepted in a narcissistic situation. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that really helps. Now, I'm just wondering if there's any way you might compare a relationship with a narcissistic person to an addiction or to a drug.
It is a lot like that. We do develop addictions towards the narcissistic individual in a very unhealthy way. I mean, of course, all addictions are unhealthy. But we, as we allow ourselves to be absorbed into the narcissistic reality, we give more and more of ourselves away, and we become almost dependent on that person for validation for our sense of self and our sense of approval. And this can be a very, you know, dysfunctional situation where we are counting on that person. It's like the more that we fall under the spell, the deeper we go into the illusion, the more we depend on that person for our sense of self. So we start clinging to the very thing that's destroying us. And that's what happens with a drug, is that drug is destroying you on many levels, but you continue to cling to it. You continue to go to that drug to ease your pain. And it takes you deeper and deeper into a spiral of sickness, into a deep, dark place.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So that's the... it becomes a familiar pattern. Now, people can get more information. Can I give your website out here?
Absolutely.
That's the one dealing with this subject is www.narcissism-abuse-recovery.com, N-A-R-C-I-S-S-I-S-M, and then the hyphen, A-B-U-S-E, hyphen, R-E-C-O-V-E-R-Y.com. And then there's also a link to that where people can go from your other website, Kalea LaRoche, K-A-L-E-A-H-L-A-R-O-C-H-E, all small letters, no spaces, .com. So, and then this is going to be a good resource. As a person starts to realize that they are in some sort of an abusive relationship, a narcissistic relationship, and they break free of that, I'm just wondering the idea of how do we start to clear that? Do we, you know, what about telling our story? Does that kind of depress people around us, or is it important to keep telling our story of what we've been through?
I find that telling our story is an important part of recovery. And yes, it may depress people around us. However, you are going to find a few people, a few good friends that are willing to be there for you. And I've had a few good friends that were just really, really wonderful being there for me through this process. But the reason that we need to tell our story is because we're coming out of an illusion. So we are, we've been absorbed into this narcissistic reality. We're coming out of that reality. It's like waking from an illusion and, you know, like the Matrix, you know, do you take the red pill or the blue pill, you know? You take the pill that wakes you up. It's not pretty. You don't like what you've woken up to.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the reality of the abuse hits you very hard. Oh, my gosh, I've just been in a very abusive situation. And during the time that you were in that relationship, you're somewhat numb. You're somewhat, you know, absorbed into an illusion, not really that conscious of what's going on. But by the time you get out, you're waking up, you're becoming fully conscious of what happened. And talking about it helps you to understand what you've gone through, to understand that what you've gone through wasn't normal. You know, having somebody to bounce it off of.
Okay. Okay, well, that sounds important.
Yeah. So I encourage telling your story. However, there's another piece, and that is don't get stuck in your story. Tell your story. You know, there comes a time after a couple months after leaving the relationship where it's time to get on with your life. And we can really get stuck in our stories. We can get stuck in being victims, and this doesn't help us. It doesn't help us to grow. It doesn't help us to move beyond it. So there comes a point where we need to stop telling our stories, and we need to start thinking about what we want to create in our life next.
Ah, yes. Okay. So a little bit of that just to let it sink in. That we actually did participate in major abuse and allowed that. And you find that sometimes when you tell a story a few times, it wakes the person up and they go, no more.
That's absolutely right. And then you get to hear your friends or whoever's supporting you go, oh my gosh, that really happened? That's really strange, or that's really messed up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's like validation. You're getting validation from somebody else. You're, instead of, you know, being validated by the narcissist, which you've kind of learned to do in that situation,
yeah.
Now you're getting some outside validation that, you know what, honey, you're okay. You're okay. You've just been through it. You've been through an abusive situation, and this is normal. It's normal you would feel this way after coming out of an abusive situation.
Oh. Wow. Well, there you go. This is something that people, if they're concerned about this, that you act in a role as a coach, as a counselor for them to help them in different phases of this recovery process. I'm taking it. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I make myself available for for anyone that needs help in any phase, whether it's the leaving or whether it's 2 years down the road and someone's just not able to let it go. And, you know, and also to do some of the psychic healing work that could be necessary in this process.
Yeah. Now your book, your e-book, Spiritual Recovery from Narcissistic Abuse, obviously brings in an element of spirituality. And I'm just wondering about how does your spiritual approach differ from the traditional psychology approach to healing?
And that's another good question. I think that psychology is good. Obviously, it helped me a lot. When you go back to my original story, it was a psychotherapist that brought this to my attention and gave me my start. However, psychology deals more with the mind. And spirituality is more of a holistic process. It deals with the body, mind, spirit. And I'll emphasize spirit. There is a deeply spiritual element to this type of abuse. There is a soul rape that happens. There is a possession of the energy, the spiritual energy, the psychic energy that happens in this process of abuse.
Wow.
And it's really important to be able to get that back. So if you look at things from an energetic perspective, and I imagine you talk about this a lot on your shows with other people, but on an energetic perspective, we all have energy fields around us. And if you were to look at the energy field of two people, you know, a narcissist and its victim, for lack of a better word, there's going to be a merging of those energy fields. You're not going to see where one ends and the other begins.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's not good. And so there's no real sense of self. You become, like I say, absorbed into the narcissistic reality. Well, that's on an energetic level, too. You're being absorbed energetically into the narcissistic reality. And in order to truly free yourself from that narcissistic reality, you have to cut those psychic cords.
Huh. Now, I'm not sure if everyone knows about this idea of cutting psychic cords or...
It's a new concept for a lot of people. It was a new concept for me back when I went through my first relationship. I didn't fully understand that process. But what it is, to make it easy to visualize, just imagine that there is an invisible cord going from the solar plexus, which is the area right above the navel,
uh-huh.
Kind of your power center. And imagine an invisible cord going from that area to that area in the narcissist.
Oh, okay.
Imagine it kind of like a hose that's being used to siphon a gas tank.
Oh, yeah.
And imagine that your energy tank is being siphoned.
Ooh.
That your energy is being sucked out to feed.
Ouch.
This other person.
Huh.
Because really, that this other person is a psychic vampire, is an energy vampire. You may have heard that term.
Yes.
So they work on getting energy from other people. The way I see it is that they're not getting energy directly from the light. They're not getting energy directly from God or spirit or however you want to say that, because they're very closed off from that energy. So they get it from other people.
Ah, okay. So they're not able to fill their cup connecting to spirit, so they have to drain other people like a vampire to survive.
Absolutely. And that's what's happening. So you have to get that hose out of you, you know. You have to disconnect that hose so that person isn't continuing to harness your energy. And this, I mean, you could be long gone, disconnected, have no contact with that person for 2 years and still be experiencing a drain on your energy from that relationship. Because psychically, those ties are still present.
Wow.
So
now, I'm wondering, can this apply because we're talking about, typically about interpersonal relationships of men and women in or two partners in an intimate relationship. What about with the parents and siblings, or parents and their children?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. It can be between friends. It can be between parents and siblings. It can be between bosses and employees. It's a little bit stronger where there's a sexual connection. So in a physical relationship between two people, there's a natural kind of merging of energies anyway.
Oh, okay.
So I think it can be a little more intense in a, it can be more intense and a little harder to leave behind in a romantic sexual relationship. However, you know, I have worked with a lot of people that are dealing with parents, narcissistic parents, and, you know, it's not easy at all in that situation either.
Okay. So there, and so you've learned and can help your clients with the process. I don't know if it's anything you can share with listeners, or if we, or if it's if we can get that by getting your book. What's the best way, Kaylia, to address this? Because if I'm hearing you correctly, we can no longer be in the presence of that person. We might not have seen them for 6 months, but there can still be this lingering crud.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, my book does take you step by step how to go through this process. However, you know, and tells you some other things that you can do to clear the energy. It's done very much on an invisible level, to just give you a little preview.
Uh-huh.
Is that this is done on an invisible level, and it's important to be able to use your imagination. It may seem a little strange, kind of weird to some people that aren't used to this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, play along. Pretend you're a kid playing a game. Play along.
Okay.
And imagine this cord going from, you know, right above your belly button to that other person, right above his belly button, like a cord that's holding you together. And imagine, you know, calling in the great Archangel Michael, who's an archangel that is known to do this kind of work, to be a protector. And he has this blue flaming sword, and you bring him in on an imaginary level, have him cut that cord, and take the end of the cord and put it either into the light of the sun or into the earth.
Oh, okay.
So that cord isn't just dangling. It's going to need to reattach if it dangles.
Ah.
And you know what? It may sound kind of hokey for some of you listening, but I had this experience many years ago after my first relationship with a narcissist, where I was having some energy work done with this man. And my new narcissistic boyfriend was in the next room while he was doing this energy work. I was laying on a massage table, and the man was working on cutting these cords in my energy field. And he says, "Wow, you've got so many cords, I ought to just get out the lawnmower." And he's joking with me, but he's like running this like whole lawnmower energy over my psychic cords, severing them. And my boyfriend at the time jumped up, ran in the room. He was completely disoriented, like, what just happened? And he started attacking the man that was working on me.
Wow.
And the next day I also got three emails. One was from my ex-narcissistic boyfriend, one was from his daughter, and one was from his ex-wife, who I knew. So let me tell you, it works. It works. It may seem like it, you know, like I'm talking about some weird stuff, but psychic energy is very real.
Yeah. And you're adding in to me an important piece, is that when those cords are cut, that it's important for them to then be either directed towards the light or connected into the earth so that there is somewhere for them to go.
That's right, because they may know on some psychic level that something's happened. Obviously, from one of the story I told you, all of these people were aware that something had happened.
Yeah.
So
didn't have their hooks in you anymore.
They didn't have their hooks in anymore, and they're going to maybe know that on some level. So you might expect a phone call, even if you hadn't gotten one for 6 months or a year. Or an email or something like that, and just be very careful not to allow that hook to come back in. I would ignore that correspondence if you're getting it.
Wow, that is just huge. And now, is this a lengthy process?
It can happen really fast. It can happen really fast. I had one reader who wrote me and told me that, you know, he felt kind of silly doing this work, but he said it worked for him right away. He felt no longer, you know, felt any connection to that narcissistic person. He felt very free after doing that process, and he was ready to move on with his life. So, for him, it happened overnight. And this can be the case for a lot of people. So it really just depends on the individual. Some people may need to do the process more than once and continue it until you feel free.
Okay. All right. Well, and I don't know if some of the people I work with do dowsing or muscle testing. I don't know if that's any way of a tool to confirm, you know, that a person is free or... Because some people aren't as connected to their feelings, I guess.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, that could work. It definitely could work. Just the only thing I would suggest is we can invite that back in, because when that cord is gone, you're going to feel different, too. You will likely feel like something's missing, like something's changed. And if you don't understand the process and understand this is what you have to go through, this is the process you need to go through, that you've been energetically hooked to this person for years, and that hook is gone now, you're going to feel that shift, and you want to be very careful not to invite it back in, to invite that person to reattach.
Okay, so I'm just thinking out loud with you. It's like two parts of the cord where the cord is cut and it's attached to the light or to the earth. Well, where it was cut from us, there's, I guess, in a way, kind of like just this open space that's there temporarily where the cord used to be.
Yeah, and I work on closing that, imagining healing white light around it, closing that cord in the area of the solar plexus and putting a protective shield of white light around your body, around your whole energy field. And your energy field's kind of like a cocoon around your entire body. So just imagine white light around in the shape of a cocoon all the way around your body.
Okay.
And see yourself sealing. See that area of your solar plexus being sealed with light.
All right. Okay, so that's an important step.
Yeah, that's very important. Thanks for bringing that up.
To talk about tying up loose ends.
Most definitely. Yep, you're tying up loose ends there.
Wow.
But it can feel very empowering when it's all done. It can be a very empowering process, and I have had a lot of very positive responses to that book, more than I would have imagined. From people that had great results with doing this process.
Well, I can tell you and my listeners that book has been inspiring to me, because I realized that I have myself been involved in some of those kinds of relationships, and for me, with my tendencies to want to support people, I'm like a narcissist's dream come true.
Oh, sure.
The narcissist put those ads in the paper, caretakers wanted, be willing to sacrifice yourself for me.
You're all over it, huh?
Yes. Is your ideal in life of sacrificing yourself like Jesus did so that you can die on the cross of my life? Ooh, that's not a nice thing. But I can understand from a person that desires or has learned to be a caretaker that in caretaking there's this element of suffering that's just sort of like normal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And then when you get with a narcissist and you're trying to take care of them and you're being drained and suffering, then it's like, oh, I'm just being a good caretaker.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we talk about the profile of a person that gets involved with a narcissist. A caretaker is a common profile. It's not the only, but it is a very common profile. You know, the caretaker personality, the codependent personality, because we are caretakers. We do care about people. We want to take care of people and see them thrive and see them grow, sometimes at the detriment of ourselves.
Sure. Now, the idea, of course, is to be healthy enough to make sure we include ourselves in who's being taken care of.
That's right.
That's why I like my emphasis recently on putting God first and developing that relationship, because then I'm going to the source of energy and not having to worry about filling God's need. But just learning to love and receive, and then from that place develop these healthy bonds and use your work to notice if things are getting out of hand. One, a way to draw those boundaries much more quickly and go, wait, this doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, oh, my gosh, people just have to go. Now, they can link from your website, KaleahLaRoche.com, to your ebook, right?
Yes, there's a button right on the right-hand side of my main page on KaleahLaRoche.com. It'll take you right there. And there's also a link right under it to my support group. I do have a support forum.
Oh, it's like where people can come in and interact, like in a chat room? Or
yes, it's a private, you know, approved-only narcissist or narcissistic abuse, no narcissists allowed.
Uh-huh.
And if I catch one in there, I'll nix them.
Okay.
Not you know, narcissistic personalities deserve help too, but my group is for those recovering from abuse. So if you're somebody recovering from abuse, then you're more than welcome.
And that's www.KaleahLaRoche, KaleahLaRoche.com.
Yes.
And plus they can, is that where they can also learn about your music too?
Well, and that's kind of my overall site, so there's a link to everything I do on that site, including my music.
Okay.
Most of the links are on the left side, but the book is on the right side. It's easy to find. It's set up pretty user-friendly.
Oh, good.
But my music is just Kaleah.com, KaleahH.com.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, this is just wonderful, opening this door, Kaleah, to learning about some of these patterns and to realizing some of the key elements that you've got to not only get away from them on a physical basis, but that you have to cut those energetic bonds, and I'm guessing that this process could be used where there may not have been narcissistic relationships, but just many relationships we've had with people over the years where it wasn't very pleasing.
That's right. Yes, and you know, I've done a lot of shamanic training and shamanic work, and one thing in shamanism. is that we come to understand that there's soul connections between a whole lot of people in this lifetime and past lifetimes, if you believe that sort of thing. And that we take pieces of people's souls and people take pieces of ours. So part of the process called soul recovery is to recover those pieces of your soul that have been taken from other people, you know, and it doesn't mean that they have to be bad people or people that are negative. It can just be during, you know, regular interaction. Something could have happened between two kids at, you know, in the kindergarten playground where one child, kind of maybe more of the bully, might have extracted soul pieces from somebody else.
Wow.
So, I mean, okay. This happens all throughout our life and lifetimes. And so the process of soul recovery is recovering those parts of your soul, but also giving back what you've taken. So you're kind of balancing the karmic scale, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds so important. Kaylee, I just can't thank you enough. Your book has helped change my life, and I'm just excited for my listeners to partake of going to your website and learning about that. And I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the program here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed being here.
Oh, that's great. And to my beloved listeners out there, remember to tune in week by week, Saturday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, to learn about more exciting new ways to claim the beauty and the grace and the glory of your love that was given to us by our Creator, and to keep that in place and to just make this planet a paradise that it once was. Until we meet again, Kaylee, beloved listeners, I wish you a wonderful week. God bless, and goodbye for now.
God bless. Let go of it.